Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The transfer portal has still got some juice, like that Vince Carter social graphic. I got one more in me. That's what the transfer portal is telling us right now as we are starting to see some commitments going down. Got Jaden Rashada committing to Georgia before we get on the air. Keandre Lambert-Smith picking Auburn over Texas A&M yesterday. Don't think that is the last of the big commitments we're going to see when it comes to this next week or so. But welcome into the Hard Count. It is Thursday, April 25th, 2024, the last one on the face of the planet. If you celebrate the NFL draft, we salute you. We're not talking any NFL draft on this show. Maybe you follow me on the socials, at Jody Pakel. We'll talk about it a little bit over there on that platform. But this is college football and only college football all year round. So we appreciate y'all being locked into that. Make sure you are subscribed to this channel because, like I just said, college football doesn't stop. We don't either. Roll, party, roll. Got some portal juice we'll talk about here in just a matter of moments. Also, Auburn, I mentioned Keandre Lambert-Smith, man. That makes the fourth commitment in 4 days for Hugh Freeze and company. How are they doing it? Because some folks might look at that from a 30,000-foot view and say, well, they're picking Auburn over schools that actually had a better record than them previously. Like Auburn went 6-7 last year. Why are they able to land these guys in the portal? I think it's more than NIL dollars, though that doesn't hurt things, I'll tell you that much. I think there's some more to that. We'll unpack that together. Spring games, Nebraska's playing one this weekend. Colorado's playing one this weekend. Oregon's playing one this weekend. What are we watching for? We say it a lot on this show. We really live by this rule when it comes to spring game Saturdays. Yes, it's a spring game for your football team. It's a great chance for us to see them get out there, play 11-11 football. It's just nice to have it back on the television. But us as fans, man, you can't waste a rep. Okay, so make sure you're getting your dress rehearsal of sorts in yourself for what fall Saturdays are going to be like for you on a game day. We salute y'all that are locked in and that are watching YouTube reruns of full games all year long. This is a nice change of pace for us to get a live game under our belt. Speaking of Nebraska, who are they going to be in 2024? Because last year, it was a lot of a similar vibe from what they've experienced in previous years where you're talking about how many one-score losses you had and how close you were in certain games. And that just, if you're a Nebraska fan, you're tired of doing that. You're saying, oh, we've done the so close thing. When are we going to get over the hump? Is 2024 the year for us to get over that hump? We'll talk about it and give you our thoughts there. Also, transfer portal rules. We gave you our transfer portal rules for how we believe certain programs should operate when it comes to adding talent. Let's kind of flip that thing on its head and talk about how we would operate if we're a player in the transfer portal. Now, I actually was able to be a player in the transfer portal way back when that whole thing got rolling. But nonetheless, we got a lot to talk about. Don't want to waste too much more time. We're glad to have you all a part of this. We don't take a second of this for granted. The fact that y'all take time out of your busy schedule to come hang out with us and talk college football, whether you're watching live on the YouTube channel or whether you're listening back on podcast at the gym, doing carpool, whatever it is, man. We really appreciate y'all, and we are very thankful for y'all being a part of this. Let's jump to it now. The transfer portal, still got some juice in it, man. Dylan Edwards, we jumped in the portal, I believe it was a little over 24 hours ago. Already a couple of schools that are in the running for one of the top, I believe, offensive skill players in the transfer portal. And yes, he's a running back. Yes, he can carry the mail for you. I think he proved that last year at different points with Colorado, but I think he also has another element to him with what he can do out of the backfield for you. Like, I think some schools are viewing Dylan Edwards as kind of that slot receiver mold, a true Swiss Army knife, caught 36 balls last year in Colorado's offense. A big part of why he transferred, from what we're hearing, is he wants to be in a position where he can carry the mail because Colorado ran the ball 40% of the time last year, one of the lowest percentages in the country. The schools in the sweepstakes right now, the big three we're hearing per Steve Wiltfong and Pete Nakos, Kansas. Remember, he's from the state of Kansas. Kansas State, where he was committed at one point in time during his high school career. And Texas A&M, currently in the running right now for Dylan Edwards. Now, that's not an all-encompassing list. I've been told Nebraska is a school that may end up making a pretty strong push for Dylan Edwards. Georgia, on paper, would make a lot of sense. Would Dylan Edwards be RB1 at Georgia? Probably not, but I think there's definitely a role you could find for him out there in Athens. If he goes to Nebraska and Dylan Raiola ends up being the starting quarterback out there, which, full transparency, I believe he will be, be nice to check it down to a dude who can take it to the house for you. Like, having an outlet when it's not there with what you want to call vertically and you can just throw it down to Dylan Edwards, be a nice little be a nice way to live, because Dylan Edwards is going to get you 7 yards plus more likely than not whenever he catches the ball in space. Speaking of catching the ball in space, man, Keandre Lambert-Smith was one of the most explosive weapons on the Penn State offense a season ago. He has taken his talents to Auburn, Alabama, and the Auburn social team is as dialed in as it gets, because they posted an elite clip yesterday. I believe it was Sammy Coates, where he throws the Texas A&M defender down to the ground when he was playing at Auburn. So a nice little subtweet there from our friends on the Plains. This is massive in every single sense of the word for Auburn. We talked about the potential of him ending up with Hugh Freeze and in that offense. The complexion of the scheme, to me, changes drastically by adding in a guy of his caliber, because we feel pretty good about who Cam Coleman's going to be. Like, we all watched the spring game. We all see what he can do with those 50-50 balls. Thing is, we weren't the only ones who watched that spring game. Other defensive coordinators that are going to play Auburn also saw that spring game and will be able to see how much of a threat he is on the outside. So what are they going to do? Common sense, you give him extra attention. Well, it becomes a lot more difficult to give him extra attention when you have another receiver out there that can hurt you, which is, of course, Keandre Lambert-Smith. Averaged 12 yards of reception last year at Penn State. Really explosive player. He's got speed to burn. I'm excited to see what he does in that offense. The feeling now, we'll talk more about Auburn later, but the feeling now is, all right, Peyton Thorne, there's becoming less and less margin for excuses for us to make for you. Now, Peyton Thorne's not making excuses. I promise you nobody within that building in Auburn, Alabama is making excuses. But the feeling right now is, okay, if Peyton Thorne is going to be the guy for us to win football games here at a high level, he's got what he needs now. That backfield is stocked. They've got weapons on the perimeter now. You got a better, I think, setup when it comes to your offensive approach. So this is massive for Auburn, and I think it changes the ceiling of what they're going to be offensively here in 2024. Simeon Barrow Jr., a guy we've talked about a lot, is a big defensive lineman from Michigan State. How big? 6'3", 290 pounds. The phrase you hear a lot during this part of the year when it comes to the transfer portal and guys of Simeon Barrow's stature is, hey, guys like him, they don't grow on trees, man. No duh. He's taking his time with this decision. He graduates this Friday, I believe, from Michigan State. LSU, Miami, Missouri, all getting visits. Texas, Oklahoma, Florida State are fighting for that final visit is what we're hearing right now. This is the most proven commodity, in my opinion, in the transfer portal at his position. 110 career tackles, 18 and a half TFLs, 30 starts. So you're not guessing with what you get with him. He's played in the Big Ten Conference, a line of scrimmage league, and produced. So whether he ends up at a Miami, an LSU, a Missouri, like, or a Texas, Oklahoma, like any of those schools, wherever he ends up at, you're not wondering how it's going to translate. You know what he is, you know who he is, and you know what you're getting. If you want to win in November, if you want to win, heck, in January for national championships, you got to have guys like Simeon Barrow Jr. playing up front for you. So obviously he's being very, very highly recruited, and it sounds like that thing is going to develop slowly based on this timeline with his graduation and taking another visit. Now his teammate, Derek Harmon, is also getting a ton of attention. 6'5", 320 pounds. So he's a bit of a monster himself. Same thing with him. He is a proven production kind of player. Played in 25 games during his career at Michigan State, 6.5 tackles for a loss. Now he's interesting because he entered the transfer portal window during the winter, took some visits. Miami was after him during that initial cycle, and he since withdrew his name from the portal, came back, and now is back in the portal in this spring window. Visited USC. Going to visit Miami. Oklahoma would love to land his services. I have to believe that the same schools that are after Simeon Barrow Jr. are also after Derek Harmon. Now, I don't know if this is at all on the table for any of these schools, but if there was a world where Simeon Barrow Jr. and Derek Harmon are texting and sort of having conversations about what they're going to do next, and they just want to go somewhere together, no idea if that's going to happen, but if they wanted to go somewhere together, that would be monstrosity for whoever ends up landing them. That would be a very nice feather in the cap of your defensive line unit. So keep an eye on that. Two big dogs on the defensive line. I mean big in the literal sense. Close to 300 pounds and 6'3" plus for both of them. We'll see what happens there. So keep an eye on that. Jaden Rashada, before we got on the air here, man, he announced his commitment to the Georgia Bulldogs. And we talked about this on previous shows. I love everything about this for Jaden Rashada. Like, full transparency, we felt pretty bad for Jaden Rashada with the whole way that his high school recruitment went and the whole thing that happened sort of in a wonky nature with the NIL deal with Florida. Ends up going to Arizona State. Has success at times, but understands, hey, I probably need to go somewhere else, sit for a year, develop, self-assess, all those things. Love that. Shows maturity, shows humility. From what I was told, again, this was not an NIL-driven recruitment for him. I'm excited to see what he becomes, man. It's a win-win for everyone because if you're Georgia, you just added another talented quarterback to your room that has Gunnar Stockton, that has Ryan Puglisi. Oh, by the way, you got Carson Beck, who's going to have a very strong case to be the first quarterback taken this time next year. And now you add a four-star player like Jaden Rashada. It's a win for Georgia because you have a quarterback who's going to add competition to that room. Iron sharpens iron. The way that Georgia does things from a competition perspective, from a position room perspective, they throw as much talent as possible into a position room. They let them fight it out gladiator style. And then the player that walks out of that thing, the starter, is the one who earned it, who competed under the pressure, and who was able to elevate their play against such strong competition. So for Jaden Rashada, you're going to develop whether you like it or not. Like, being at Georgia, you buy into Kirby Smart's way of doing things, and you play with some of the best players in the country on the scout team with you. I mean, that thing is stacked with 4- and 5-star recruits giving a look to the ones during the week. And, oh, by the way, you're playing against 4- and 5-stars during the week as well. You have no choice but to get better. And that's going to be massive for him long-term. And if you win the job at Georgia after Carson Beck leaves this coming season, obviously he's not playing this year. It's Carson Beck's team. It's Carson Beck's job. But if you show up next year and win the job, like, you're set up for success. I mean, that's going to do wonders for you when it comes to the NFL and do wonders for you when it comes to how you're assessed at the NFL draft process. We've seen that with multiple guys. So, bottom line, win-win for everyone. We're happy for Jaden Rashada, and I'm sure the folks in Athens, Georgia, are also very happy to land a quarterback of his caliber in that room. Last one to talk about here, James Brockmeyer. He's a 4-star caliber cat from the class of 2021. He entered the portal with a do not contact tag. Now, James Brockmeyer was competing for that center spot in Tuscaloosa. Looks like he felt a certain way about how that was going to shake out. He's 6'3", 285 pounds. He went in there, as I mentioned, with a do not contact tag. He's from Fort Worth, Texas. Now, for those of y'all that don't know, a do not contact tag essentially means, hey, listen, I'm in the portal. Don't call me. I'll call you if we're interested. To me, this feels a lot like a TCU for James Brockmeyer, but we'll see how this whole thing shakes out. But offensive linemen, man, they do not grow on trees, much less offensive linemen that have come from an SEC program. So that'd be massive for TCU if they're able to land him, but we'll obviously keep a pulse on that as it shakes out. Transfer portal continuing to roll. Keep it locked right here for all your portal coverage. We'll make sure we're attacking this thing together. Now, Auburn, they've been attacking the portal. There's no way around it, man. They have a top 10 portal class in this 2024 cycle. That includes the winter. But in the spring portal, they landed Keandre Lambert-Smith yesterday, the wide receiver from Penn State, who's explosive as all get out. That makes 4 transfer portal wins for Auburn in 4 days. They're on a heater. They are portaling like a program, is what we say on this show. So how are they doing it? We'll talk about it right now. But make sure you're dialed in right here. Make sure you're subscribed to the On3 YouTube channel, this show, The Hard Count, live not once, not twice, but 3 times a week, right? Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern. Listen, if you're watching a college football show during the month of April, you're a little bit of a sicko, all right? Let's just be real about it. We're a little bit of a sicko as well because we talk about it during April. So the bottom line here is we're kind of one and the same. We'd love to have you all a part of this community. So when Auburn is making these kind of wins on the transfer portal recruiting trail, the question everyone has when you have success at the talent acquisition level is why? Why is that happening? What are they doing to make it happen? And I think it's also important for us to validate the quality of player that Auburn is landing through the portal. They landed 3 defensive linemen and Keandre Lambert-Smith, who I think is going to change that offense, which we'll talk about here in a second. Personally, I think a good rule of thumb is gauge your quality of player you're adding by nature of who else wants to add them with you. Like when you have teams in the mix like a Florida State, like a USC, that also want that same player, that should be validating that staff also believes that the player you're after is a pretty darn good player. Now, some evals are a little bit harder to make than others, but Philip Leedy If LSU wanted him, Brian Kelly and that staff, I promise you, they had done their homework and they were going to be after his services because he's a good player. Auburn lands him. Transfer defensive lineman from Indiana. Keandre Lambert-Smith. A&M was in the mix there at the very end. Florida State came up at one point in time. USC came up at one point in time for him. These are not just leftovers, okay? They're not just collecting the scraps from the transfer portal. They're going out and adding some of the best available and winning these recruiting battles for these top players to go and win in 2024. So going back to the original question, why is this happening? I think there's a couple of stable factors when you look at this thing. The first is I believe they're playing ball at the NIL level. Like, let's not call it, you know, let's not beat around the bush. Let's call a spade here, man. The care factor in Auburn, Alabama is strong enough, and I think it is attractive enough to land some of these guys. Because that's, I mean, in all of these transfer portal recruitments, much less high school recruitments, NIL is a factor. And Auburn is saying, we understand that. We're going to meet what you are looking for, or at least be in that range. Come on with the come on, man. And again, the care factor of a place like Auburn, I think, is going to stand the test of time. Like, I don't think it's a thing where if Auburn goes out and has a 500 season next year, you're going to see people say, well, you know what, I'm putting my money somewhere else. No, people are bought into Auburn, believe they're bought into Hugh Freeze, and that's going to continue to pay dividends on the talent acquisition and roster building side of things for that coaching staff and for that program. Here's arguably the more impactful part of this for Auburn. I think people are seeing the trajectory of what Hugh Freeze is building out there on the plains, and they want to go be a part of it. They see where that thing is heading. They're like, hey, I want to go get on that rocket ship before it takes off. I want to get on that train before it leaves the station. Because you see, you got a coach who has won everywhere he's been, including the SEC and Hugh Freeze. You already have a talented roster that's there. They portaled in 21 transfers from last year. I understand not all those guys are still there, but the talent nucleus in-house at Auburn, I believe, is strong enough to win. And you saw that last year during the season. People saw them play Georgia down to the final drive. People saw them take Alabama to a 4th-and-31, needed a miracle play to beat them. People see the beginnings of what Hugh Freeze is putting together there. And so when you see trajectory plus the proper resources to bring those guys in and be a part of that roster, that's dangerous. That is dangerous for the rest of college football. People see the paws on Auburn. Like, you talk about dogs when they're puppies, and if you see big paws, it usually means they're going to grow into being a pretty beast of a dog. That's Auburn right now, man. Did they get it done the way they wanted to last year? No. The New Mexico State game was, I'm sure, embarrassing for everyone involved. The Alabama game, you hate seeing that happen. The Georgia game, you're like, gosh, we're so close. Why can't we put it together? But you see the big paws. If that's year one for Hugh Freeze, what's year three going to be like? What's year five going to be like? I think it's also worth noting, when you step on campus at Auburn, when you step in that Walto's facility, which is brand spanking new, $92 million, we got a tour, and it was absolutely unbelievable. The way that it feels at Auburn, just quite frankly, is big time. It feels big time. If I'm a player being recruited, and I step in that facility, and I talk to that staff, and I see the way they do things, the practices that they have in place, the operations they have in place, it makes me feel like, okay, this is a professional outfit that is doing things the right way, that is not skipping any steps to get to where they want to go, and they are acting how they want to be viewed, and they're acting how they want to achieve. Does that make sense? You gotta act in a first-class way if you want to get first-class results, and that's what Auburn's doing right now. It's not just the players, too. We talked about players that had options that ended up picking Auburn over other schools in the SEC or other elite institutions. DJ Durkin, he was at A&M. It's an SEC school. They had a good defense. He chose to go to Auburn. He chose to follow Hugh Freeze. Coach Nix at Ole Miss, I understand there was a bit of a promotion there, it sounds like, from what he was doing at Ole Miss to what he is potentially doing at Auburn, if you're reading between the lines there. He was at an SEC school. He was at a school that just won a New Year's Six Bowl game last year. Wants to be a part of what Auburn's doing. And I'm not saying that money isn't involved here for some of these guys. I'm sure that it is. But at the end of the day, man, the trajectory of Auburn, I believe, is massively attractive to everyone that has an opportunity to join their roster or join their staff. And so now for 2024, I think the feeling within that fan base is, why not us? Like, why can't we go out and get it done in 2024? And what does get it done look like? Is that 10 wins? Is that an SEC championship? I think it's all based on your expectations. I think somewhere in that 9-win range would be a phenomenal pop of a season for year two for Hugh Freeze after winning 6 games the year before. But you got Peyton Thorne from the portal last year. He now has, I believe, a better offensive direction with Hugh Freeze. He now has Keandre Lambert-Smith and Cam Coleman, so there's weapons to throw the football to. You have a stocked backfield with Jarquez Hunter. Also, on top of that, you got some more time now under your belt in the SEC. You know what you're getting into. You know what this whole thing is going to be. You know what you signed up for. So the thing for Auburn in 2024, what I think is the ultimate hinge point for success, and it's no secret, it is Peyton Thorne. It is what he ends up doing here. Because I just mentioned all those pieces, you still got to have the glue to put the project together, right? You can have the best poster board in the world, you can have the best pictures printed out, but if you're not able to put those things together, you're getting an F on the project, brother. You're not going to be able to do anything with those great pieces. So I'm excited to watch how that comes together. I think Peyton Thorne, just full transparency, I think he will take a massive step forward from where he was last year for the reasons I just mentioned. And I think Auburn, that trajectory, brother, it's I'm sounding like sketch. That trajectory, brother, it is, I believe, is headed the right direction. I can't wait to see what it ends up being. They built it up now, a bit of solid foundation, and now they're ready to go make some moves. Keep on rolling here. Seeing some hate in the chat for Peyton Thorne, man. It is what it is. I understand last year, your resume is your performance. Your resume is your tape. And he did not put some good things on tape last year. But I do think the variables around him, the context around him, we talk about that for a lot of quarterbacks right now in 2024, was not nearly as good as it's going to be this upcoming season. And I think you also saw in flashes when Hugh Freeze grabbed the controller to call the offense, he said, hey, my turn, let me get a few stabs at this thing. The Georgia game, most notably, you saw a different Peyton Thorne. You saw a different offense from Auburn. So we'll keep an eye on that. But regardless, roll party roll. All right. Spring games, round 3, baby. We've had a phenomenal last 2 slates. This weekend slate is a little bit slimmer when it comes to some of those marquee programs across the country. But nonetheless, what are we watching for in round 3 of some spring games and spring showcases this upcoming weekend? Let's start in Autzen, out there in Eugene, Oregon, man. You got Dylan Gabriel and Dante Moore also going to get some reps, I have to believe, in the spring game upcoming here for Dan Lanning and company. The thing that I'm watching for most closely is how comfortable does Dylan Gabriel look driving this car? Now, the way that you assess this, I think, personally, is what kind of decisions does he make? And how quickly does he make them? Because last year, this offense was so successful. Yes, because Bo Nix is a tremendous quarterback. He puts the ball on the money. And yes, because you got great skill players. I mean, you saw Troy Franklin be elite last year. You saw Tez Johnson be elite last year. Bucky Irving is going to get drafted. If not tonight, then tomorrow. Like, they got a lot of things working in their favor. But even with that same thing being said, they were so efficient and so effective because that ball got to the right place in the right spot on the right time. Like, defenses were having to catch their breath because they were going so quickly. That takes a little bit of time to get your feet underneath you to totally feel comfortable driving this car. But once you get all the buttons figured out, once you know exactly how this whole thing works, they're going to hum. I think this fit for Dylan Gabriel long-term is going to be tremendous. But I'm really excited to watch how quickly he makes decisions and how quality those decisions are this point in the spring. Only been a handful of practices, so you're not going to make a definitive statement, but how does he drive the car? That's what we're watching most closely out there in Eugene. Now, Colorado, man, I'm excited to watch this one too. Year 2 of the Deion Sanders era. Can we run the ball, and can we protect Shedeur Sanders? I understand Colorado's defensive line is not going to be probably up to par with what you see across the Big 12, but even with that being said, you have to help Shedeur Sanders. You have to, because I think he is I'm not an NFL draft guy, but I think he is probably an NFL quarterback. I think he's probably close to being a first-round NFL quarterback. Again, not a draft guy. But at the end of the day, how many more games does Colorado win last year if you just cut the sacks for Shedeur Sanders in half? I believe he was sacked like close to 50 times. Maybe it was over 50 times last year. Like, he was running for his life when he wasn't getting sacked. If you cut that number in half, how many more games does Colorado win? Because they lost 4 by 1 score. I'm not saying they win 4 more games, but I'm saying you give yourself a better chance. Does Colorado win 5? Did they make a bowl game? I'm just saying that's a massive differentiating factor. And then in that same vein of helping Shedeur Sanders out, making this offense multidimensional. We got to be able to do something on the ground. We have to. Have to. Averaged 2.9 yards a carry last year, I believe. One of the worst averages in the country. Doesn't help that they didn't run the football or make an effort to run the football that consistently either. They averaged, I believe, 40% when it came to times they ran the ball during a game. So they didn't really make an effort to run the football, and Deion Sanders was pretty transparent about it. He's like, listen, you got to have the ingredients to make the meal. We don't have the ingredients. We're going to the portal to get more linemen. They've gone to the portal. We'll see how that whole thing shakes out. Nebraska is going to have a lot of attention this upcoming Saturday for their spring game for good reason. Year two of the Matt Rhule regime getting rolling. I want to see Dylan Raiola sling it. I'll say it. Matt Rhule spoke very highly of his offense and the way that they're rolling. Talked to people close to that program. They also feel confident about the direction offensively. I want to see Dylan Raiola flash and show me that there is something to the potential of what this offense can be. Now, to be clear, if Nebraska wins in 2024 at the level that they would like to win, it'll be in large part because of Dylan Raiola. It will not be all on his shoulders. Now, I've said this a couple times. I think he's your guy. I think he starts for you game one. When he gets announced the starter, I don't know. But it could definitely end up being a situation where we leave this spring game and feel a lot about the Nebraska quarterback room, how we felt about that Georgia quarterback room last year after their spring game. Because they didn't name a starter, I don't think, till a lot closer to game one, probably around fall camp. But everybody knew it was Carson Beck's job. Like, after he came out and was just slicing and dicing, looked surgical, looked comfortable, going the right place with the football, we all knew it was 15's job. Is that the same feeling we have coming out of Nebraska spring game? It's worth noting Carson Beck had a lot more college football experience under his belt, having been on the team for a number of years. Dylan Raiola is supposed to still be in high school. So, sort of keep a fluid opinion. If he throws an interception, he's not a bust. It's not the end of the world. Nebraska's not going in the tank. Just understand there's some context needed for all of this. This is his first game action, so to speak, with it being a spring game. He'll be non-contact, but still, man, last year, Nebraska, as many close losses as they had, averaged 6.2 yards a pass and 18 points a game. I want to see Dylan Raiola uncork a few deep balls, connect on a couple of them, just show me that the ceiling and the engine for this offense with what we expect for Dylan Raiola is more than just expectations and more than just us putting two and two together from high school film and what Nebraska brought in through the portal and all those things. So spring game round three, going to be a lot of fun. We got a good slate this weekend. Didn't even mention Arizona. That'll be fun to watch too, but make sure you're dialed in here. We'll talk about all these games the morning after, and we'll give you our unfiltered opinion, unfiltered thoughts on that Sunday morning sprint. So lock in there. Spring games, man, it's something about it. The fact that we have 11-11 football being played, man, it's provocative. It gets the people going. And I mentioned Nebraska, they're playing their spring game this upcoming Saturday. I think it's fair for us to ask this question together as a group, man. Who is Nebraska going to be in 2024? Because the way that it's felt from the Scott Frost era to the Matt Rhule era, if you were just looking at the box score, you say, well, yeah, we changed head coaches, but the scores are still pretty similar to what we were experiencing previously. One score loss after one score loss, heartbreak after heartbreak. I talk about the Rod Wave syndrome for our friends out there in Gainesville. Heart been broke so many times, you don't know what to believe. That's how Nebraska feels. They're like, I want to be optimistic. I want to believe in the Big Red. I want to buy in. I want to drink the Kool-Aid, but I've been hurt too many times, man. I don't know if I want to go down that road again. And I understand, but we'll talk about it right now with what you can expect so your expectations are properly gauged moving into 2024. Make sure you're subscribed. Nebraska Faithful, y'all been tremendous to us. Y'all have attacked the subscribe button with us, and we're glad to have y'all a part of the show. If you're new, welcome. College football, it's year-round. We're talking about a spring game here. We're talking about, you know, different things throughout the offseason, so we're a little bit sick for this game. So are you. Lock in. We appreciate you for that. When I look at Nebraska in 2024, I don't think this is a typical Matt Rhule rebuild of sorts. I put rebuild in air quotes for those that are listening on podcast. Because the way that Matt Rhule's done things, he takes over a team, whether it be a Temple or a Baylor, they're down bad, and then he brings in good culture, he develops, they evaluate at an elite level, and then by year two, they have a little bit more success. They, you know, win maybe seven games, maybe eight games, depending on how that bowl game goes. And then year three is where you really go for a conference title kind of season. I believe this is a AP year two Matt Rhule team. Now, for those of y'all that you know, understand or remember the AP courses we took in high school or maybe watched other people take in high school, I think it's a little bit advanced from what we've seen from previous year two teams. And what I mean by that is we had a different jumping off point for Nebraska than we did for Baylor and Temple if we're Matt Rhule and company. Like Baylor, there were folks talking about that school, their football program at least, ceasing to exist. Temple, I think they won like one or two games the year before. And then year two, they had a little more success and did what I said they'd do, which is win right around seven or eight games. I think this team, the roster talent level, is higher than that. I think that the buy-in, too, culturally, is higher than what those previous schools had. Because these guys at Nebraska, man, you don't play close games unless you have the proper competitive approach. Now, it takes a little bit, something extra to get over the hump and win those one-score games, but I'm just telling you, like, if your culture is just for the dogs, and it, I mean, if your culture is just in a bad spot and it's down bad and you need to rebuild that whole thing, you don't play that many close games like Nebraska did year one. Now, I think what we're going to see from them is the defense is going to keep them in every single game. Nebraska's top three in returning production. 78% of that defense from last year is back production-wise. Most importantly, the defensive coordinator is back. Tony White, he's going to be a head coach, I believe, this time next year. So, last dance, baby. This is my opinion. They allowed 18 points a game last year. The thing with them is they're going to be like the they're going to take a ping-pong approach, I think, when it comes to how they play football in 2024, which is you just hit it over the net, hit it over the net, hit it over the net, and wait for your opponent to make that fatal flaw. Whether they hit it off the table, whether they hit it into the net, whether they throw you a pick, whether they fumble it, whether they bust a coverage, whatever it is, whenever they make their mistake, you pounce on it. That's what Nebraska is going to be defensively in 2024. I truly believe that. Now, the flavor packet for Nebraska, the thing that changes the entire way you look at them as a team and as a meal, if you're keeping with that metaphor, is the ceiling of what they can be offensively in 2024. It's a game changer, man. Added some pieces through the portal, and let's just call a spade, man. If Dylan Raiola is anywhere near what Nebraska fans think he could be, if he's anywhere near the rumblings of what he's doing behind closed doors right now, they're going to be really excited to watch offensively. And let's just be honest, like last year's offense isn't setting the bar extremely high for success. They scored 18 points a game, did Nebraska. They averaged 6.2 yards a pass, which is over, I mean, it's worse than 100th in the country, I believe, 109th in the country, for those of y'all that are stat-checking there. They're not done yet via the portal, I don't think, too, so we'll see what they add. But they're not losing a lot. They're not losing a lot. The way that the offense could be so much better compared to last season, now the schedule's a little more difficult, we understand that. Are they a conference title team in 2024? I don't know, but I think they're going to be an absolute pain in your side every single week, man. Like what I just said, I don't have a ton of concern about Nebraska rolling that defense out there. I think it's one of the sneaky best defenses in the country. And if you just have something serviceable offensively to roll with, and if Dylan Raiola kind of grows into himself as the season wears on, like how good could they be? We're going to find out, but they're going to run the football effectively. That's who they are. That's who Matt Rhule is. They're going to block, they're going to tackle. Like all the cliches that you hear coaches talk about, Matt Rhule actually embodies into his football team, and they eventually take on that persona. They're taking a step from year one to year two under Matt Rhule, and that year one to year two development, the way that Matt Rhule talked about it to us when he came on this show, is it's about these guys taking our process and making it their process. Like it's one thing for a coach to say, hey, I want you to do X, Y, and Z on the field, off the field, in the locker room, all these things. And you can receive that message. It'll have some impact on you because you have more structure around you. But when the team takes that and runs with it, which I think they're doing right now in Lincoln, quite honestly, that changes everything for you. Changes everything for you. So going back to what I said, Nebraska is going to be an absolute pain every single game you have to play them. They're in range with the roster, I believe, from a talent level. I don't think that disparity is quite as large as it was previously. The experience at quarterback is going to be a little bit of a learning curve, I believe. But the way that Matt Rhule does things, paired with how that roster is close to what they need to be, they go to Ohio State. I believe it is the week before Ohio State plays Penn State. Like, will Nebraska be at a talent disadvantage? Absolutely, but I promise you, man, like Ohio State, that's the last team you want to see walking into town. They go to USC in November, does Nebraska? I don't know where USC is going to be at that point in the year, but when you got to play a tough outfit like Nebraska, during the final month of the season, it's like, golly, man, we don't want to do this. We don't want to have to roll with these dudes and play at their level. And I'm not speaking to USC. I'm talking about anybody across the country with Nebraska. So the process for the good folks in Lincoln right now in-house, it's working. It's working. Now, you may not be seeing the fruit that are coming to expect in future years from Matt Rhule, but you're seeing things start to develop. You're seeing those roots start to take hold. So I think in 2024, they are a team that will make a bowl game. I truly believe that. And there's a lot of folks now that are saying, we've heard you say that before. You have. Hey, hand up. We've missed. We've missed a couple of times on Nebraska. Should we have been right based on the close losses? I mean, again, I'm just saying we've missed. We'll leave it at that. We've missed, but I don't think we're going to miss in 2024. I think this is the year to make a bowl game. And I think Dylan Raiola and the support he has around him is going to be a major differentiating factor in their success in 2024 offensively, because the defense will keep him in every game, every single game they play. Yeah, man, that's going to be one of the most intriguing teams, I believe, in all of college football, man. All of college football. That's going to be one of those teams that you could look up at some point during October and be like, oh, look at Nebraska. And then you'll see them on your schedule a little bit later in the season. You're like, golly. We gotta play those guys. They're going to be a pain. They're going to be the most – if you see them on the schedule, they might be one of the most annoying teams in college football with how Matt Rhule is going to have that situation running. All right, about to get your questions here in a matter of moments. Before we get to that, though, we had a segment on yesterday's show with transfer portal rules for different programs throughout the country. How should you assess the portal? It was things like, hey, don't deal with crazy people. Whether it's a player, whether it's an agent, don't deal with them. We said things like, make sure you spend your NIL dollars on the appropriate positions. Don't just overspend because he's the best available. Spend money where money should be spent. So we did that whole exercise from the team side of things. Let's have that conversation from the player side of things. And this is not me telling players what to do. Don't get it twisted. This is more so a word of advice from where I'm sitting right now. Not all that far removed from my playing days, but even so, I'm not pretending to be the know-all here. I'm just telling you what I think. So let's start with this, man. Begin with the end in mind. Stephen Covey has a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I believe that is the first habit. What do you want out of your next spot? Do you want to develop like a Jaden Rashada? Do you have 1 year left you got to play right now? Do you want to go somewhere to get a great graduate degree? Do you want to go somewhere where you can help set yourself up for a nice job after you finish playing ball? Whatever it is, let's begin with the end in mind. Don't just go to the big logo. Don't just go to the school that's nicest to you, who throws the biggest NIL bag at you. Begin with the end in mind. Because here's the deal, man. After you leave that school, whether it's in the portal, whether it's to the draft, whether it's to the real world, which is a horrible term to use, but regardless, it probably works on the same. You are living based off of what happened, the repercussions from that original decision. So begin with the end in mind. Be a highly effective person. That's one of our major rules for this transfer portal. If you're in the portal and making a decision, now also, if you're making a decision, here's how we would go about it. The job is always more important than the salary. Now, as we said yesterday, context and nuance is important for all these rules. There's exceptions to every single rule. But even with that being said, man, get your bag. For sure, get your bag, get paid. Don't go somewhere for free if you don't have to. And if you can get something better, obviously, like, take that into account. But at the end of the day, man, don't go somewhere for a bag if you're not going to play the role that you want to play in that team. Right? Like, if you're a starting quarterback kind of player, and this goes without saying, but don't go somewhere for a whole lot of dollars where you're going to have no offensive line and no help around you, and you're just going to finish that season with a whole lot of bumps and bruises and a few more zeros to your checking account. That's not a good way to live. That's not beginning with the end in mind, the first rule we laid out there. So make sure we're considering the job first. And this is just honestly, this is good advice in my opinion. This is a good word to live by when it comes to life after ball too. Whatever you want to do for your job, you're going to be there day after day. Payday only happens so many days during the year. You're going to be at that job every single day. Make sure you like it. Make sure it's something you want to be doing. Make sure you see the value in it, the intrinsic value, not the monetary value. Job over salary, role over NIL dollars, context over NIL dollars. Follow the success stories. follow the success stories, right? Like if I'm in the transfer portal, I'm looking at a couple of schools. I'm looking at places where guys have been successful. Florida State, they've proven if you come play for us in Tallahassee, we're going to help you be successful. If you don't succeed at Florida State, it's on you. It's on you because we have proven now, whether it be Keon Coleman, whether it be Johnny Wilson, whether it be Jared Verse, whatever level you transfer from, if we think you're good enough to come here and play for us, it's on you. We're going to make sure we support you in every single facet. Follow the success stories. If there are situations where guys go to places and are never heard from again, consider that. Consider that. Where there's a blueprint for success, I would make sure to check those schools out, Florida State being one of them. Ole Miss, pro mindset, you hear that a lot out of Oxford. That's one of those schools. Oregon, Texas, the process that they have in place to help you as a transfer portal player. Very, very important. Watch the Tide. Not the Crimson Tide, though I'd watch them too if you're playing in the SEC. Probably a good rule of thumb if you're playing them the week before. Are guys leaving that school? Are guys coming into that school and then leaving that school in mass exodus? Like, watch how the ebbs and flows of that roster are operating. If you see 10 to 15 guys leaving from that roster, maybe DM one of them on Twitter, on Instagram, and say, hey, what was the deal? Why did you leave that school? Coach is crazy. Hey, the NIL deal they told you they were giving you, it bounced. Hey, actually, they have a horrible culture. They don't treat their players. Whatever it is, like, I'm not pointing fingers at any specific school, but I am saying if I'm a transfer portal guy, I'm looking at what my peers are doing when they are all going there. That also probably impacts your potential spot. It also means something if a ton of guys are leaving. So keep an eye on that. Watch how the tide ebbs and flows when it comes to how teams operate with the transfer portal and how players operate for that team within the transfer portal. Last one here, and this might be the end-all be-all when it comes to our transfer portal rules for specific players. Is one in the hand really less than two in the bush? What I mean by that is where you are currently as a player, whether you're thinking about jumping in the portal, maybe you're already in the portal, thinking about going back to your potential school that you were at. Is it bad or are you uncomfortable? Because bad is another conversation. If you're uncomfortable, that might not be the worst thing in the world. Hey, I don't want to have to compete for my spot against this guy. If I compete for my spot against that guy and I lose, I can't play next year because I only got 1 year left. That's different. But I got to compete against this guy. He's a 5-star. I'm only a 4-star. I don't think I'm going to be able to beat him out. How many years do you have left? Maybe it's worth rolling with it a little bit here. Maybe it's worth seeing if you can go the course of a season. And hey, I'm just saying, you're always one play away if you're a second string guy. Okay, so is it bad or is it uncomfortable? If it's uncomfortable, there's a lot of value intrinsically long term that you can take away from having pushed through something difficult. All right, just because you lose a position battle, just because you're not first on the depth chart during the end of spring ball or starting fall camp, doesn't mean it's going to stay that way, man. And I would say this from a personal level, the things that I have taken with me from playing college football, playing high school football, none of them have to do with anything that actually happened on the field. All of it was typically something where I was uncomfortable, I had to push through something, and I had to lean into the hard part of things to get out a better return. Now, I understand NIL dollars are a whole factor in this, so be smart when it comes to that, obviously, but I'd be slow to decide that something is bad when maybe it's just uncomfortable when it comes to hitting the portal or going back to your previous school. So, again, we're not telling you we're the end-all, be-all on these things, but talked about it from a team side of things. Figured it was appropriate to talk about it from a player's point of view when it comes to rules with operation for success in the transfer portal. Good stuff, man. Good stuff. I see Jared Stidham. Special team, special plays, special players. What's up, brother? Glad to have y'all in the chat, man. Glad to have y'all tuned in. If you're watching live right now, make sure you're subscribed. If you're listening on podcast, go ahead and rate and review for us and all that good stuff. Y'all are what drives this whole operation. This is a college football community, all right? We got a show, we got a camera, we got a mic and all those things, obviously. But the community behind the show is what makes it what it is. You know what else makes this whole thing what it is? Is the man making it all happen behind the curtain. Let's bring him out right now, Nick Brake. Nick Brake, what's up, baby? Big kickball day yesterday.
Yeah.
Came in, said we had some good news.
Oh, yeah. We're back.
Club dub, baby.
We're back. Yep. 4 for 4. About 7 catches, man. It's a busy afternoon in right field.
you're going to get a random drug test coming from that kickball league here soon, brother. You go 4-for-4 and you make a couple plays in the outfield.
Yep.
Might be asking you to take a few tests, you know?
I would comply.
You're not on PEDs, are you?
No.
Okay. I was making sure.
Respect
I was just making sure.
Too much.
You know?
Respect it too much. Hey, this is a good question coming respect from the truth.
I love that.
Actually, I'm going to ask the truth's question last because it's not football related.
Okay.
So I'll get to this question from Cyber. What's your impression on Nico from Tennessee? We saw him firsthand.
Yeah, man. We saw him in person. Looks good. He looks real good, man. We said it after our visit. Seeing him throw the football on the run, even in just like a 7-on-7 setting where someone's not actually chasing him, he has so much pop when that ball comes out of his hand. And it's just a practice. They weren't in full pads. They weren't tackling the quarterback. So we add all that context to try and temper expectations. I think he's going to be really good, man. Once he gets comfortable playing in an in-game capacity, which just full transparency, it could take a second. It may not be he hits the field and plays at a Heisman level right away, but when he gets his feet underneath him, he has all the tools in the world to do some really special things at Tennessee.
Yeah. Plus, he seems like a really good guy. So.
Seems like a good guy, doesn't
good
he?
Good on them. Goat Dog says, opinion on SEC transfer rules compared to the other conferences. Do other conferences need to adopt this rule, or does the SEC need to loosen up?
I think it's only a matter of time before one or the other happens. I would have to believe if other conferences can make it happen, they'll adopt those transfer portal rules. For those of y'all that are like, what is he talking about? The SEC has a rule in place to where during this specific transfer portal window, that spring portal window, you cannot transfer from an SEC school to another SEC school. And I'm sure the coaches love it because they're like, okay, if we do a whole install during spring practice, we protect ourselves because we know if you're at Georgia right now, you're not going to Alabama after we finish up practice and you're taking your playbook with you. So that's, you know, an encouraging thing. If you do want to transfer from an SEC school to an SEC school, you got to sit out a year. So I guess you could still technically have some strategic advantages there. And if you're an SEC football team, like you're loving this. You're loving the fact that you don't have to have a guy play against you the following season after he played with you during spring practice. So I think a lot of conferences would like to adopt this. I don't know how difficult it is to install. I also could see a world where someone steps in, and I don't know who it would be, but some power that be steps in and says, SEC, no more of this. We can't allow you to do this. And I don't know why they would or wouldn't do that, but I would say I think it's a matter of time. I think most conferences would like to have that be a reality, to be honest. A lot of these players that are in this portal window during the spring, from what we can gather, probably would like to go to an SEC school from a specific SEC school. Like, they want to stay in the best conference in college football, but given the rules, can't do that. And, yeah, that's kind of the way that we view it right now. Matter of time before it changes.
Yep. So we're going to end the show on two questions from our Michigan fans. First, it's Ferris. This is Michigan related. Ooh. He wants to know and mentions kind of some of the influence that Michigan has in the draft, but will they break the draft record this weekend, JD?
Dude, I don't even know what the draft record is.
I believe 15 would do.
15? Okay. So that I think that was set by Georgia in that 2021 draft, I believe.
It's a recent record.
I'm sort of walking through a dark hallway trying to find a wall here to speak about the draft. We're not a draft show, but I think they're going to do it, man. I mean, I think it's like 17 or 18 guys that could get drafted. Mm-hmm. We were talking preseason about them having like 20 guys that could get drafted. So, yeah, I think they'll do it. I think they'll do it. I'm curious to see where our guy JJ goes, man. Friend of the show, JJ McCarthy. Is he?
I do not know.
Buffalo Bills trading up for him. Your Bills, Nick.
I was listening to Pro Football Talk this morning. They were talking about the Bills trading up for Roma Dunze.
Whoa, we like that pick.
I'd be happy.
I think he could. I mean, that was a segment we almost did on this show. Haven't seen a ton of traffic for NFL draft talk across college football platforms. So we basically were saying, we don't think y'all care about it, so we're not going to talk about it. But favorite players in the draft, really quickly, J.J. McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, Marvin Harrison Jr. Dude, Roma Dunze is going to be a stud. Mm-hmm. We got to see him warm up pre-national championship game. The reflexes on that guy. It sounds stupid saying it about a guy who did what he did last year at Washington and just put up ridiculous numbers and had highlight play after highlight play. But, like, seeing him up close and personal, making the lay over the shoulder catch during the game or during pregame warmups. Special.
Yep.
Special, special. Special team, special players right there.
Absolutely.
You know?
Hey, really quick in the chat, regardless of what your needs would be in the draft, if you were a GM, you get one pick in this first round. Who are you taking? JD, ooh, who do you take? Any, regardless of needs, who is the player in this draft you can't pass up?
So my mind went to, as an Atlanta Falcons fan, mm-hmm, I like Kirk Cousins. I'd love to see them go get a quarterback just because I think there's some quarterbacks in this draft that are going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming I can't take Caleb Williams.
You can take whoever you want. Who is the player
I'm
in the draft?
I'm going Brock Bowers. I'm going Brock Bowers, dude. He's going to be a freak. We all know he's going to be a freak. Him and Marvin Harrison Jr. feel like the two most can't miss, right? Like, mm-hmm, would any of us be surprised if Marvin Harrison Jr. was a Hall of Famer when his first, you know, his first name is Marvin's, last name's Harrison, and his dad did what he did in the NFL? Mm-hmm. Those two feel like just layups to me. I'll go Brock Bowers because he is an alien.
Okay.
He's an alien, and good, I'm excited answer to watch him. What about you? Do you have one, Nick?
One of those two. It's Brock.
Really?
That,
those are your two
me
as well?
I've got the first pick in the dynasty draft in my fantasy world as well. So I'm thinking I'm going to go Marvin.
Hey, you want to go crazy here? I have a question for you. What do you think about the Caleb Williams stuff? Have you seen the...
What about him?
I don't know. Like, they do a draft thing yesterday. Everyone's wearing the same sweatsuit. It sounds like, I would imagine if everyone's wearing the same thing, they were told or given a sweatsuit to wear. Mm-hmm. And he rolls up in like just his own fit. And I'm like, cool, dude, you're the number one pick in the draft. Like, you are literally a one of one. Like, he literally could go and change the entire Chicago Bears future, you know? But I'm also like, I don't know how I feel about, like, there's the little things that kind of make you go, huh, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if I love that.
All I know is, you know, you don't want someone who's going to be a virus, but if you are that person, or if you are him, you can do whatever you want.
And he is him.
And I think if he is then whatever you want to roll up in, let's see it. Let's get to this last question. It is not football related. It's
love
from
it
the truth.
Love it.
JD, if you were cursed or you can only eat one kind of food for the rest of your life, what would that food be?
Ooh, I'm cursed. Shoot,
I mean, this
man
could be a great
you have
curse
an answer to this? You have an answer
I mean,
to this?
Hot wings. Now, I'm assuming that it doesn't matter like your nutrition, and because it's like you can't eat anything else but
free game.
Yeah, hot wings.
Hot wings. I like that. Yeah. So you can go, if it's kind of food, you got the teriyaki wings, you got buffalo wings, you got barbecue. Like, so you're crushing wings.
And chicken's not like that bad for you either. So
no,
that's
you'll
best
be a
meat
protein fiend. Yeah, you're not going to be, I mean, you're going to be lean. Gosh, all right. I mean, hey, that kickball league better watch out because that's going to be a lot of over-the-fencers, right?
Oh,
if we're eating just chicken wings. It's a great question. Dude, if I'm going kind of food, I would like... oh, we got so close. I wanted to make it through
almost
the show without coughing. If I'm going kind of food, I love Chinese food, and I think you can kind of go sort of healthy with Chinese food because I can go orange chicken. I can go teriyaki chicken. I can go... Sushi might be Japanese, but I could probably go fish. I could go some salmon. So I'll go ahead and say Chinese food. That gives me a pretty good range I can roll with.
Lo mein.
Lo mein. Yeah. Desserts get trickier, I suppose, but like you can still make something happen, you know?
I walk to the Chinese place in the farmer's market every weekend, and I change it up. You get to whatever you want. You know, they've got some great stuff. They've got something called Korean corn dogs.
Whoa.
Those are really good. So...
What does that entail? Is it just a corn dog?
Yes, but it's something that I guess it's a different kind of corn dog that they make. I guess they said that this is something that that's really popular in Korea, and I was like, oh, that's really cool because these are delicious. So
let's go. Nick Brick, a man of culture. A man of culture, a man of the people, hitting dingers on Wednesday, producing a show on Thursday.
Absolutely.
You're the man.
Good answer, JD.
You're the man. I appreciate you, bro. That's the man, Nick Brick, getting us all teed up for tonight's NFL draft. For the record, I would absolutely take Caleb Williams. Just to make sure there's absolute clarity right there. His ceiling, I mean, we all saw him in college football. We all saw what he was. We all know what he can be. Caleb Williams, number one overall. We appreciate y'all being dialed in, man.
College football is a year-round sport, and for you to watch this show and to treat it as such, we're extremely grateful for. We're extremely grateful that you are a little bit on the sick side for this whole college football thing. It means a lot to us, and we're grateful that it means a lot to you. So make sure you subscribe on your way out of here. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure you've liked the video. And if you're listening on podcast, go ahead and subscribe to the feed for us and give us a review. And we love y'all, man. We appreciate y'all. Enjoy the draft tonight. Have a great kickoff to the weekend here. We're going to keep this party rolling. We will see y'all.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.